Hi, welcome to When Songs Mean Business. I'm your host, Steph Belcher. Today's episode is day two of our Level Up Your Business workshop from January 2022. In this workshop, we are talking about all the things we did during the pandemic that helped us keep our businesses afloat or helped us stay in touch with our humanity. We also start to talk about the things we're going to leave behind as we move into 2022. This episode features the kind of conversation that we have monthly in our brand new Patreon community. Over on Patreon, I am thoughtfully curating a community of financially sound and successful musicians. We have multiple ways to keep in touch, from a private Discord server to monthly group Zoom calls for business advice. And one of the tiers even features a monthly private consulting phone call. Check it out. The link is in the show notes. It is patreon.com/whensongsmeanbusiness. I am very much looking forward to curating a musical community with you. Thank you so much for listening. And here is When Songs Mean Business. Happy Tuesday, everybody. I am happy to see you all. Thank you for joining me for round two. I want to welcome Eric. Eric is new today, but not new to the group. Eric's a friend. So,
hey, everybody.
Eric, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I didn't get all the way through yesterday, but I heard the beginning of the intros. So I kind of have a sense of who everybody is a little bit, some familiar names. I've been doing music for 30-ish years, I suppose. I lived in Chicago for a long time and did a lot of commercial music out of a big studio in Chicago. A lot of music for advertising, and that has morphed for me into a lot of music for democratic politics. My little niche of my original music for media world is now a lot of political media that comes in cycles during election cycles. I've worked on a little bit of indie EP and album work with some familiar names from Michigan, Jetty Ray and Chris DuPont and Mike Gentry and Brian Riley are all occasional collaborators, and I'm really happy to be working with folks like that. My other professional life is that I'm also an attorney, and I'm an immigration attorney. So working on asylum cases and other fighting ICE and fighting our ugly immigration system. But in the context of here, commercial music producer, composer, trying to re-educate myself about licensing. And I've enjoyed listening through Steph's podcasts and picking up some nuggets from some guests about services I should be subscribing to and ways to make sure that I'm finding those pennies out there when my music gets used. So I appreciate all of that and appreciate all of you.
Yeah, we appreciate you too. Thanks for joining us. Hello, William. How are you? Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. I'm well. How are you?
Doing well myself. Would you like to introduce yourself to the group? Not to just bring you in and put you on the spot, but...
No problem. Yeah, my name's William Cenote. I'm a full-time musician and content creator. A thing that I'm probably known for is an LED grand piano that I built that I perform with out in the Bay Area in San Francisco. That's what I kind of make a living doing right now. That plus like session work, production work for other artists, videography work for companies and brands. And I got invited here through my partner, Kate, who told me that this was really awesome. She explained it how shit was yesterday. And I was like, yeah, I want to get in on that. So
yay.
Here I am.
Well, it's great to see you. Thank you so much for coming. Everybody else introduced themselves on the podcast, and I lost internet last night, so I didn't get that up yesterday. I just put it up today. So if you want to get to know everybody else, you can just check out the first like 20 minutes of the podcast episode that I put up today. But I am Steph Belcher. I am a business manager and tax preparer in the music business. I started in music in 1998. And moved through marketing, journalism, venue management, event production. I've tried everything pretty much. And then I eventually gave up to be frank about it. I was like, I'm done with this nonsense. I'm just going to go do taxes. And so I started doing taxes. And then I was like, well, wait a minute. Maybe I could do taxes for musicians now that I know how to do this. So since then, I've had a lot of very intimate conversations with clients. And I have found that these open conversations about money really help move people along in their careers. You know, my purpose of this is for us to have conversations none of these days are going to be me lecturing. So I hope everybody's ready to chit chat. But I would really love to talk a little bit about the kinds of things that you found over the last 6, 12, 18 months in your career, in other jobs, things that you've been doing to kind of stay busy or make money on the side. And kind of let's talk a little bit about ways that you've been able to integrate other parts of your like human existence into your life with that kind of like absence of music. I don't know if I'm making any sense. Maybe I should have had a script. But does that make sense? Does my question make any sense at all?
Makes sense to me.
Cool. Oh, you want to start with your answer? What have you been up to lately?
Sure. So for the majority of my career, I was a session pianist and composer for bands. I would join a band, play piano for them, then go on tour with them. And that was how I made the majority of my money. Eventually I found a band that was full-time in touring and I was making a good living off that. I wasn't really stoked about the band itself and like the members, and I kind of was starting to feel a little burned out on touring. So in 2016, I moved to San Francisco. I had created my own piano. I had built this synesthetic LED grand piano, and I thought I'd just try to make some, you know, money doing gigs out here. I started doing that. It did pretty well. It really started doing well like 2018 and 19. I felt like I was just totally crushing it. And then, you know, pandemic happened. And then I had to like all my income like was just totally taken out. I was doing very little side work from there. And then I felt like I had already been kind of delving into the live streaming world a little bit before then. And then when that happened, I was like, all right, I'm going to go full force on this. I got like my little SBA loan. I bought all the camera gear, all the streaming gear, bought a bunch of courses, did all of that. And then I did streaming, and I was able, like, by, you know, the grace of it to like support myself through the pandemic. And it also opened up a whole other avenue of like videography and streaming work. And then, so what I started doing, you know, I just started kind of like really honing in that craft, and that's been definitely like a little supplement to what I'm doing now, because, you know, gigs are slowly coming back. It seems like this next year might be a little bit more promising than the last two. Yeah, really.
Fingers crossed.
But yeah, I've been kind of like supplementing that with just like production work, like taking on, you know, other artists. Because I used to kind of be in this, when I first moved to San Francisco, I kind of was like, all right, I'm stepping out of this shadow artist like mentality where I'm like making other people's stuff. I was making so much stuff for everyone else and never taking credit for it. And I was like, I want to like take my credit. But then as, you know, I felt like that was like a little bit of a maybe a young brain mindset. And so I kind of like went back to, well, you know, if I love creating music and if I'm making it for somebody else, it's like, doesn't matter. I'm getting to create and make what, you know, what's fun for me. So I started doing that for other artists as well. And then that plus like, you know, the video work supplementing, which is all great stuff to apply to my own, you know, music and my own art as well.
Can I ask you a couple questions?
Yeah, sure.
I have some follow-up questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay, so about the videography stuff, had you ever done anything like that before?
I'd always like been really, like had fun editing videos. Like I would, from when I was like a little kid, I'd like, you know, take videos with like whatever camcorder and like edit them, like either on the camcorder itself, or I would, like when phones started having cameras, I would like take videos and then use iMovie to just like edit funny little videos. But it wasn't until like 2020 that I was like, all right, I'm going to learn how to use DSLR cameras. I'm going to learn about lenses. I'm going to learn all like the professional aspects of it, lighting, all that stuff. And then I started working with like Premiere Pro. I actually got some like a crash course of Premiere Pro when I was, I went to, I don't know if anybody remembers that pipeline protest that happened in North Dakota that was Standing Rock. Yeah. I went to that. I was there for about 4 or 5 months. And while I was there, I was working with a media company called Digital Smoke Signals. I was like flying drones for them and taking videos. And I got a crash course from one of the editors who showed me how to use Premiere. And then once I had those like base level beginner skills in 2020, I was like, all right, I'm going to like take some courses now on this stuff, and started really diving into it. Cause I just felt like regardless of whether or not my, you know, it would apply to my music career, like people are always going to need content. That's just mm-hmm. the age that we're in. Content's the gold rush right now. So
yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very valuable skill for you to have refined during the downtime, as we call it. Cool. What software or program do you end up streaming with when you do live streams for yourself, for your own music?
Oh, for my own stuff? I guess it really depends. I mean, like, I like Twitch. I was doing Twitch for a minute. It's such a slow and tight community that you have to like really be on that platform for hours and hours when you're not streaming if you want to actually grow your fan base. Because a lot of people, there's not a lot of cross pollination from like, you know, maybe a little bit from TikTok to Twitch, but not very much from like Instagram or Facebook. Sure. People aren't really going over to Twitch. But I like streaming to YouTube as well, because I have like a, you know, small but like loyal following there. And then for most of the client stuff though, it's like Zoom or whatever, you know, whatever they use. Like I've done like ones for like Google Hangout. I've done them in it's just some other ones. There's StreamYards. I've done it in StreamYards.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. I've just always curious about where people are finding success with streaming. I popped into a DJ's Twitch set and the music was great, super enjoyable. And I thought she was really personable. She was like chatting with the chat box. She was like responding to people. She was really into it and knew some of the people by name, but it definitely seemed like they all knew each other.
Like I said, it's very tight community there.
That's interesting. That's how Reddit kind of was at the beginning. Cool. Thank you so much for sharing that. Does anybody have any questions about like live streaming or anything that William added? Cool. So does anyone else?
Is anyone aware of a general educational resource to get ramped up in the practice of streaming live music? Like recommendations for interfaces, cameras,
that's a really good question. That's a question that I have been like contemplating on how to answer myself for people, because one of the things that I kind of like found work in was at the beginning of the pandemic, literally just being tech support for people who had that exact same question, because it was a lot of me having to like, felt like trailblazing a little bit. Now there are like Roland has their own course on how to do it, but it's only using their stuff, obviously. It's great. It's great. So I have to, you know, I'm a sponsored Roland artist, so I have to be like, yeah, it's awesome. And I would say that anyways. They're great.
Shameless plug. Love it.
They're great. They're great stuff. They have great stuff. But I will say that there is other stuff out there that is a little bit better for budgets, a little bit nicer to people's wallets. I have to say that.
That's fair.
Yeah, there's it's kind of like, it seems like there's still, like if you can go to YouTube and there's a YouTuber that's probably streaming full time, that's like, oh, here's my streaming setup. But I would just recommend like looking at people's setups. Like when you find a streamer you like, one of the ways I learned actually was on Twitch. When I would find a streamer that was like, I really like their setup, I would get in their chat, I would subscribe to their channel, and I would get in their chat and be like, what gear are you using? What video switcher? What cameras? What lights? You know, are you using like a lot of it is like learning how to use OBS, like open broadcast stream platforms, like asking them, how do they make their overlays? Who made their overlays? Did they make them? You know, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like right now, it still seems like it's just being in the community and asking people.
Yeah, I would say like use whatever camera that you have, and then YouTube, like how to use OBS, because it seems a little bit intimidating at first, but you'll start to get the hang of it the more you do it. I wouldn't pretend to have the answers, but at least I've been able to set that up a couple of times.
Yeah, I'm in the stage of trying to figure out how to stream. I've done it a few times, but the audio settings are always a little wonky compared to just recording. So it's a lot of experimentation. A lot of people saying, I can't hear you. Let me fix the settings kind of thing.
Yeah.
I need tech support.
Yeah. Even like little lags. Like I'm sure you guys can see like with a lag right now, like, you know, I even have a lag because in Zoom you have to do like other stuff using like a software called Loopback if I want to have multiple audio sources. It is convoluted, but there is simple ways to do it. There's also very simple avenues to get stuff, like using iRig with your phone. You can literally just use your phone, iRig, come out of your interface and then stream straight from your phone. That's how a lot of people do it to like Instagram Live.
Oh, that's a good Twitter. Idea.
Yeah. Is it an app?
No, it's a little device. It's a special audio interface that connects to your phone. And then you just take the audio output from whatever your other interface, like what I was doing at the beginning, because streaming equipment was sold out, the back order for months at the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, God.
I mean, the video switcher I have right now, it took like 4 months for me to get it.
Wow.
Roland, even as a sponsor, couldn't get me something sooner than I could just buy on my own.
Wow.
Like they took like almost 9 months to get me my switcher. So,
just because I'm kind of new to streaming and video myself, I'm used to teaching in a live classroom. What's a video switcher? You mean like between different cameras?
A video switcher is, just a little device that you plug, has a bunch of HDMI inputs on the back and you can just push a button. Like I don't have any other camera set up, but I can push a button and it would technically be to a different camera right now. But I don't have any other camera set up.
Oh, I need one of those.
The one I'm using right now is an ATEM Mini from Blackmagic because I have some Blackmagic cameras and they work really well. There's like zero latency between them.
Oh, cool.
Little things. There's a lot of stuff. I'll just say right now, I'm happy to be a resource for information if anybody wants to like hit me up on social media outside of this.
Absolutely.
I'd appreciate that,
just because I've like the first 4 or 5 months of the pandemic, I was just like hours a day, nothing else, just learning this stuff.
Cool. Thank you. Please drop your contact info in the chat. And cool. I'm going to share all of that now that I have internet again. That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all that. I hope that was valuable. I want to keep the conversation going. So just if you have anything else to add right now, feel free to speak up. Otherwise, I would love to keep hearing other skill sets that you developed or other ways that you were able to maybe take a step back from music for a little while or take a step back from the rest of your life and able to focus solely on music, you know, whichever way it went for you. Tell me more about how you've been kind of exploring different avenues of like life and humanity lately.
I'll share.
Yes, Kate.
During the pandemic, I started teaching several vocal students online.
Cool.
Just because I couldn't see anybody in person. And that felt like a good way to be able to connect with people and have some sense of consistent community of students that I would see every week or every other week.
Sure.
And work on some sort of creative goal that also got them out of the stress of their life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one way that I was able to focus on music, focus on a skill that I was learning to develop and becoming a better teacher and creating new ways and new formats to teach people while figuring other things out in my life.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great. Thank you for sharing. Did you find any difficulties teaching voice online?
Not so many. I mean, it's definitely more preferable to do it in person, but through Zoom and through having the audio coming through like Ableton on my computer, it was really good. And I also started recording the practices so that they could listen. And I was just doing really customized sessions. So I would create vocal warmups with create music for them to sing along to. Or if they liked a song, I would create a backing track for it that they could sing along to. Or just have different practices that they could listen to and go along with afterward.
That's cool. You hadn't done customized lessons like that before?
A little bit, but not to the extent I'd done like a group class before or things in person, but this was much more, I wanted it to feel extra special and also like it was something that was, more enticing for them to do, because people have, especially during the pandemic, so many more options for different people teaching classes and courses. And that was another thing that I took up that was less focused on my own music and more focused on learning. I was just taking advantage of all the people being like, hey, I'm doing a free masterclass, or hey, I'm doing this course now that I have time to be at home. So I was signing up for a lot of different production classes, vocal production, singing classes.
Yeah. Do you think that that customized lesson planning is something that you'll continue to use even when you are able to teach in person again?
Yeah, I think that it's really beneficial for somebody to have something to take home, and it is an easier prompt to just play something to sing along to or listen to the piano and go along with it than self-start.
Sure. Sure. I love that you were able to start recording everything. That seems like a value add onto a situation that made it felt like a value detractor in the first place. But then it's like, oh no, getting to, you know, like I would have loved to be a singer, but I wouldn't listen to myself. So when it got to the point where I was like, no, you have to record yourself and listen back, I was like, nah, I'm out. And I think that's really valuable for people to do, just have it be automatic. Like, yeah, I'm going to record the session. It's just normal, right?
Yeah.
So I love that.
It also leaves room for them to look back 6 weeks later, be like, whoa, I can hear a huge improvement in my voice.
Yeah.
And if they didn't have that recorded, sometimes those changes are so subtle over time that you're like, yeah, I feel like my voice is better. But when you listen back, you're like, wow, I've made a huge improvement.
Yeah, that's really valuable feedback from teacher to student. So I really love that you drew attention to that in this setting. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else who pivoted to, you know, some other kind of way of life that they want to highlight? Yeah, Chesney.
Sure,
yeah.
I can. I actually was teaching music in person before the pandemic, and hearing you say that is awesome, because I personally really struggled with how to take my lessons from in person to like over Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. So I ended up actually like stopping doing that. But I think it's really cool to see how other like music teachers kind of pivoted and like created new ways of doing things. So that's really awesome to hear, by the way. But over the pandemic year, when we weren't doing anything, I did find it really like nice to have the downtime to just like learn new things that I would never have the time to learn normally. Like I learned Photoshop and Illustrator and, you know, After Effects, and I learned all those like design programs, and I took a digital marketing course on Google, and I just was like, what can I learn right now and what can I like do? And those things that I did over that year have like gotten me jobs or like gigs or whatever in the past year, because I like sat there and did that. And I actually today sat down and designed the like single cover artwork for my new single coming out next month.
Nice.
And I haven't sat down in Photoshop in months, because I haven't had the time, you know, and it's not like a cornerstone of like what I use every day for my job. So I just don't go into it as much to like just mess around and create something interesting and see what happens.
Sure.
And I kind of miss the time. I mean, it's nice to be busy. It's nice to do things, but having that a little bit more downtime to kind of like explore those different things like that aren't music or aren't like your go-to hobby or your go-to creative outlet, kind of like develop those. I think that was cool. I think I enjoyed doing that, and that has paid off a lot in the past year, which has been cool. And
I totally feel you on that too. It's just like going in and like, you're not like just jumping from place to place playing out. So basically took all that time to learn how to do videos and learning how to like mix my own music, and built up a small YouTube channel. And the YouTube channel was like, basically I think of it like a resume. Because I ended up like the YouTube channel, people are like, hey, can this guy play? Can you sing? Well, I've got a YouTube channel with like over almost 100 songs. So there you go. And
go see for yourself.
Yeah, no, it's been great. And also the thing too with COVID that's been strange is that like a lot of like some of like the old timers are kind of moving on to like other stuff. And I think it's also given like a lot of opportunities, because the band that I'm currently in, like, they'd had the same guitar player for like maybe like 5 or 6 years. And he just said, hey, this COVID thing's kicking me out of the game. I'm done. I'm moving to Florida. Bye. Never see you again. And it gave me an opportunity, and like they saw my YouTube channel, and it got me, it basically put my foot in the door to get the gig that I have now, and I'm loving it.
That's great.
It's almost like in normal life, when everything's moving, stuff's going so quickly that if you don't mm-hmm. have an opportunity to show that, or an opportunity to prove that you can do
what
you say you can do and know you can do, then you're not going to be able to show it because there's no time because everything's moving so fast. But like having that downtime, everybody kind of got more comfortable with online stuff. And so we kind of got the chance to just like put out things into the world that didn't have to be from an opportunity we were given. Like we could just make that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it's cool, like, cause now you have a YouTube channel that you can go to, and it's like, mm-hmm. you didn't have to do, you created that for yourself. So that's dope.
Yeah. But that's why I love hearing what William was talking about, like having a switcher and ways to make it more efficient and take less time. Cause like for a lot of those things, like I was mixing live drums, keys, guitar and bass and vocals for everything. And it just took way too much time for me to do. At least now I can maybe like have people like in my band and stuff come in and do it. But like it just takes too much time. I'm not sure how I could do it at the same level. So hearing stuff that Will was talking about might speed it up and make it possible for me to do it.
Yeah, on that, one of the things that I have found in the live streaming realm is as time went on, that clients were actually wanting more pre-recorded stuff. But they want it to be live. They want it to be a live pre-recorded stuff. So I started trying to hone in on how to like make the whole thing, the whole video edited and everything at the same time that the performance is happening, to save me the time on having to sit down, take multicams footage and chop and edit it all. So setting what's called macros on one of the switchers I have, where it's automatically switching. And I set those macros to be in time with the song. So I know that I'm going to get that edit whenever it's happening. You know, I know where the keys are going to, where my keyboard solo is going to be. So it switches to the overhead camera and stuff like that. Yet really, you know, there's definitely ways to, you know, hone in and make the process a lot easier.
That's awesome. Faster. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that you know all that is impressive. It kind of sounds like you're speaking Greek. Like I know the words that you're saying. But, and when I hear you saying them, I'm like, oh, wow, there's a lot of stuff in the world that I don't know anything about. And
it's a rabbit hole.
That's one of them right there. Yeah, no, thank God for people like you to educate the rest of us. I honestly believed until today, I honestly believed that there was a person standing behind every camera, that when it switched, it didn't occur to me that there was a device that would do that for us. It's just like, I've never thought about that before.
Yeah. It gets pretty technical. Actually, in one of our videos, Kate was just sitting at a device that was controlling, like remote controlling a bunch of different cameras. So she was able to sit there and like switch to one camera and then zoom in on it, you know, change its aperture, all that stuff.
That's cool. Sick. Yeah.
And yeah, the technology is getting better and better. So it's getting easier and easier to use.
No, that's awesome. Cause that's some of the stuff that I'd have to do manually. And you've got like these like three different shots, and you have to like time align them all. And then you like record the music. So then you take the music and you have to record to the music, make sure everything's in sync. So that switcher thing sounds brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. I love that.
Definitely an asset.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I want to make sure that we get to today is starting to move into the process of what we're going to do next. These past 2 days, yesterday and today, we talked a lot about the past. And I did that specifically. I think it's really important to acknowledge where you've been and what you've learned and what you want to take with you and what you don't want to take with you. So if anyone is comfortable sharing, I would love to ask you as a group, as we move into 2022, this next season, you know, whatever it's going to look like, I'm not going to make any predictions. I'm terrified of jinxing anything. But as we move into this next season, what do you want to leave behind? What do you not want to bring with you? Whether it's something from 2019 that you are glad is gone, or something from right now that we want to try to, shake off, you know, before we kind of get back out there for the summer? Is anything jumping forward on you, something that you want to leave behind? I can start if you want me to. I want to leave behind any kind of driving where I'm spending more than 2 or 3 hours a day in the car, just going between Ann Arbor and Detroit. I'm over it. That is the number one thing I don't miss. And I can't believe I did that. I drove like 400 miles. There were days that I would go from Livonia to Ann Arbor to Detroit, back to Ann Arbor, and like, no, never again. So that is a huge one for me, because that means that all my students are going to have to come to me. And I'm not going to be teaching a morning session in Detroit and an evening session in Ypsilanti. You know, just for people who aren't from Michigan, I'm talking about places that are like 30, 40 miles apart and hitting, you know, basically I was driving somewhere between 60 and 90 miles every day. And that got to be absolutely exhausting. So that's what I'm going to leave behind. And
I have a question.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that?
That's a great question. I have to just set it as a boundary and decide that I'm going to let it go. And then I have to raise my rates realistically, because I'll be going from a day rate that included two sessions to a day rate that maybe only includes one. And so that one, you know, I announced a price raise. I told everybody this is the last chance to get me at my previous rates, but that's a huge, huge one. And then I think transitioning online is going to help with that. There are some students that learn better in person and I'm there for them, but I'm only going to do one a day. I'm not going to do two. I just once I stopped that lifestyle, I realized how unhealthy it was for me. And the caffeine that I had to absorb in order to keep up with that lifestyle and not fall asleep while I'm driving home at 11 o'clock at night, you know? So anyway, that's enough talking out of me. What do you guys want to let go of? What are you thinking?
Well, I'll hop on.
Yes, please.
Because I relate to that. Because I moved to Michigan like right before the pandemic. But before that, when I was doing all my gigs, I was driving all over the place for not very much money, like doing, you know, orchestra gigs where I go for two rehearsals and a concert for $150, which is insane. And now that I have a kid, like I'd spend all of that on babysitting. So
exactly.
I really appreciate that stuff went online, because I've been able to form so many connections and start doing more of my teaching online, doing lectures for universities, things like that. And it's so nice to have that online. So I want to ditch the traveling too. And as things come back, be really clear and intentional about the in-person stuff that I do.
Cool.
And not drive 150 miles for $100.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah.
Especially with gas prices now, I feel like it should not even. I was told something very interesting by a friend of mine who's in the industry, and he was like, as soon as you see inflation on gas prices reflected in the mainstream media, you instantly raise your prices with everything else and you let everybody know. And you can reference that as well, because at that point, there's not a question of like, well, why are the rates going up or anything? It's like, it's right there in the message with itself. As you've seen in the media with the inflation of gas prices, I am now, as a result, having to raise my prices, et cetera. And I thought that was really wise information from him.
I did that
immediately.
Yeah, I love that. I love tying your rates to real world costs,
tangible things,
something that
everybody can see and everybody deals with at the same time.
And groceries. Yes, Mark, tell us your question.
Are you building that in to a rate schedule, or breaking it out as a variable? Because 6 months from now, gas prices may be down
20%. Yeah, but that's just that's your profit. I would build it in. I would build it in and in the forward facing. So don't tell your clients I'm raising your rate by this amount because gas price cost me this amount, but you should know in your head if you're profitable on travel. So if you got a gig in Traverse City and you calculate, there's a website, it's cost to drive. I think it's .com, costtodrive.com, but you can put in what kind of car you have, where you're going, and how many passengers you have. If your car is full of gear, put in that you have like 6 passengers because more, you know, more weight, more gas, and it'll tell you exactly how much it's going to cost you to get there and back. And then I would double it and add it to the price and always double all of your costs. And then also add your time onto it. So I would bill a minimum of $25 an hour, if not 50, for all of the time involved in the gig. So rehearsals, set list prep, email marketing, driving there, doing the actual gig, sound check, tearing down afterwards, hanging out at the venue. So if you're spending 10 hours on the gig, you're fine with 25 an hour. You're starting at $250 minimum per person. And then take that cost of gas and all expenses, double them and add it on top of it. And that's just kind of off the top of my head how I would do it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
And also to add to that, with the whole gas of prices going up and down, history has shown that, like, yeah, gas will go up, especially when inflation hits. It'll jump up and it might come back down, but it never really drops down below where it like spiked from. It just kind of makes these, like, it's always doing this. You know what I mean? It goes up and down. So even if you're saying yes, like inflation of gas prices and whatnot, I think everybody assumes that, you know, just if it goes down, you're not going to lower your prices because gas is probably always going to be raising along with inflation.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And inflation has been crazy this year. We tried to build a deck and lumber was out of control. And I know grocery prices have gone up like crazy. So there's a lot going on in the economy right now that affects the cost of doing our jobs. That's a really important, I think, note to think about whenever you're thinking about pricing. Who else is leaving something behind leaving it in 2021. We can pretend like we still have access to 2021. Eric, I can see the smoke coming out of your ears. What are you thinking? What are you letting go of?
Sort of a willingness to undervalue my work and my time, which ties right into what you're all talking about. Hmm. And that's in no small part to the ongoing conversations I get to have with you, Steph. So I texted Stephanie earlier today and said, even in my mid-50s, for the first time, I just created a really hard rate card, because I find myself getting into conversations with clients about, well, what's your budget? What can you afford? You know, of course I want to work with you. We'll make it work, which is fine. And a certain amount of that is necessary. I know my clients' downward budget pressures too. I get it. And I know how easy it is for them to use cheap or essentially free library music. If they have a blanket license with one of the really cheap libraries,
sure,
they can task an editor with going diving through an archive of a library they have a blanket license to, and it costs them pennies to use a track. So yeah. I'm always sensitive to pricing myself out of a conversation with them, but my work and my time are valuable. And I just sit down and created the clearest rate structure I've ever done. And
yay.
The next step would be sharing it with my clients, of course.
Yeah, you share it with me first and then.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's got to be left behind.
Awesome. Let's all leave the what's your budget conversation behind, because it gives too much. I mean, I take that back. It's an important question when you really want to work with somebody and you're willing to make sacrifices. And you're curious. I think it's a good question to know. I like there's a pricing strategy I really like where you have 3 different tiers, kind of like bronze, silver, and gold. And that bronze level is the stuff that you would probably give away for free if you really could. It's just, you know, it's the stuff that you're like, you didn't have to really use your brain to come up with it. You didn't really have to put a lot of your education into it. And then you have like a silver level where you worked harder on it and it's definitely more refined and you're prouder of it. And it would be a little bit harder to let go of for a minuscule amount of money. And then you have that gold level that is like customized or super complex, requires a lot of attention. And that gold level is what you're selling, what you're trying to get to with everybody that you talk to. So you come to them and you say, yeah, let's do a values fit. Okay, we're good. Yes, I can help you with that. Would you like to look at the bronze, silver, or gold level packages? And obviously make it sound a little less corporate, but you know, that like I have three different service levels here and I can give you something out of your budget that you're going to love for this bronze level right here. And it's going to be $25 and you're going to be thrilled with it. Or we can come up with something together that is going to stand the test of time in this gold package. And that's going to require more time and blah, blah, blah. So if you give somebody those three options and let them tell you which one they want to work with you on, then you're coming in with some boundaries around the conversation in the first place. And you're able to really say, you're going to get value for your price because we worked on it together and all of our expectations are clearly laid out. But then the trick is staying within those boundaries and not doing extra work, not customizing things for the bronze people just because you like them. You know, that's where they get me.
And that's for me, my client, my real regular client pool is a small group of people who I've known for a long time and I've worked on a lot of projects with. Yeah. It's not a public facing thing where I have arm's length transactions with strangers. These are people right. I do repeat work for. So that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked, I think you have a market for those arm length clients and that's a nice little passive income route for you, but I know you, so I'm biased.
Can I ask what it is that you do for your clients?
Yeah.
Say, William, what was that?
What do you do for your clients?
I compose music. I think I gave my intro before you jumped on. So I'm a composer. I create music for a long time. For a while, I was in Chicago in a big studio, a lot of ad music. And one tiny subset of the ad music 20 years ago was political campaign music. We all hate to see the bombard of ads when it's campaign season, but it's actually a cool little niche for a composer because when they're introducing a candidate running for Congress, they can put up any feel-good piece of music on that video and it's fine. But when they're cutting fast spots in a campaign and they switch from positive to negative so rapidly, good luck with library music. So it's a cool little niche to compose for them. And I've had relationships with clients for a long time and worked at all levels of politics. So the problem is I'm competing against essentially free library music. When they have blanket licenses with some of the cheaper libraries, they can task an editor or a mixer to go pull music that costs them nothing. And for many clients, it's good enough. So to have the relationships with the clients that see the value add to post-scored music that's really perfect and turns on a dime when the spot turns on a dime, that's my sandbox.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's interesting. Would you say the majority of your clients are political at this
right now? I lived in Chicago for a long time and we moved our family to Ann Arbor. So I kind of knowingly stepped away from a little bit of my big ad agency relationship world. So at one point I was doing music for all the big brands that we see on TV all the time. And now the political music is probably 90% of my music for media.
I didn't realize there was such a market. Yeah, that's
my clients are not candidates themselves. My clients are consultants who are creating campaigns for PACs, issues, unions, candidates, only blue team, no music for red team.
Just charge the red team double.
No, do it.
We actually had a long conversation. Oh my gosh, that must have been like 5 years ago now, yeah. Eric, right? Maybe four. Four years ago.
I have a friend who says I'm leaving money on the table by not working for everybody, but it's more than just music for me. I won't do it. I have other things in my life that are very politicized, and I've decided that I'm okay with my music work being politicized as well. So,
but it took him a while to get there.
I hid my political music because I didn't want to lose a branding job. And now I don't care if my client at the big agency doesn't want to work with me because they're offended that I did music for a leftist candidate, then they can take their branding job somewhere else at this point in my life.
Oh, I'm proud of you to hear you say that. You're making big leaps and bounds, Eric. That's awesome. Right? Yeah, dude, you're great. Cool. What else are we leaving behind in 2021?
We have something so when I first started, I was working a lot of smaller paying jobs, and I was, you know, I'd work 9 shows in a week. It was kind of tagged into what you were talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I was making, say, $150 a show, you know, in the summertime when it's really busy, I was stacking as many shows as I could. And I physically suffered from it. Like, my muscles were so tight that I'd wake up in the morning and you can't see my hands because my camera's not working, but I'd wake up and it would take about an hour just to get them to come out of like this weird fist like this position. Yeah, it took a lot of medical massage and CBD oil to like come out of it. I literally lived off of Motrin to the point where I can't take it anymore. Because I overdid it. So, you know, 2020 hits then, and I'm forced online. So something I want to leave behind is overworking and undercharging. And I have to figure out somehow. I've been trying for the last year. I wrote a sponsorship brochure because while I might not be national, I can still offer smaller places. Whether, you know, it's space on my big van that I'm driving constantly up and down, you know, 75 and 23, or over to Indiana, you know, I still have something marketable and valuable to other venues. Sorry, my son was yawning in the background.
No, it's okay. It's cute.
So leaving behind overwork and really maximizing every inch of what I can, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Oh, that makes sense to me 100%. Do you feel like that's possible? Are you ready to make the sacrifices? I'm sorry, that's the wrong word. What I mean to say is like raising your rates and having those higher paying gigs and having those tough conversations. Are you like,
yeah. So I made the decision, you know, hard and firm, unless there's some place that I really want to get my toe into, an area where I've not been before. Mm-hmm. I have a minimum, you know, a $300 minimum. And then okay. I add on, you know, $50 per 50 miles. You know what I mean? There are only a couple places, like 3 or 4 places, who took a chance on me when nobody knew who I was. And I was really just learning how to do stuff. They still pay the same rate.
Sure.
But I feel like there's this loyalty to them. So for now, as long as it doesn't stand in the way of better paying places consistently, sure. I haven't raised prices on those handful of places, but I have been steadily working on increasing across the board. Every new place for the last couple of years, I add $100. Sorry, he yawned again. I add $100 every year to my price. So, you know, this year I finally got onto this place called Kelly's Island. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Oh yeah.
It's right next to Put-in Bay, and I've been having trouble getting into Put-in Bay because of the click I talked about yesterday. So I've been pushing on Kelly's Island, the neighbor, and I finally made contact and booked a show. And I used that pricing model I talked about yesterday, where I knew that I wanted to walk away gross with, you know, $500. Between travel and everything. So I pitched them at the higher rate, but then offered you know, because you don't know me, here's my rate for you. So that's kind of like my target mark for new venues. I'm looking for places that can pay that $500 gross amount and working those in, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I love having a minimum. I think that's really important. I noticed when I was working with my undergrad students, it was always a question for them of whether they were going to take a night off of their job, their, you know, barista job or whatever kind of job. So I made a spreadsheet where they could put in however much they made at their day job. They could put it into the spreadsheet and then figure out how much time a gig will take you. And so, you know, if it's like driving there is going to be a half hour, I play for 3 hours and here's all the other stuff. You could see by taking this gig and spending 10 hours a week working in music instead of at Starbucks or whatever, I'm basically missing out on $12 an hour, blah, blah, blah. So if you guys want access to that spreadsheet, I can link you to it. And it becomes a thing where you have to set that boundary. You have to know what that minimum is. You have to know I can't work for less than this number per hour or per day or per project, whatever, however it works for you. So I support your boundaries.
Thank you. And just for other people, because think about, you know, how much value, monetary value there is in the equipment that you're taking if you're live gigging. Yeah. And how much it would cost you to replace that. So if you are at a place where you can't value yourself, you know, think about what it would cost you if you broke something or something died and you'd have to get it fixed while you're out on location. You know, so if you can't do it because you don't know how valuable you are yet, do it because your equipment is receiving wear and tear and the day is coming when you're going to have to replace all of it.
Yeah, that's really important. That's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. All right. What else are we leaving behind?
I can go. If nobody else wants to go.
It's all yours.
So I think what I want to leave behind is feeling, I don't even know because I don't feel bad. Like, I don't feel like I'm overpriced, but I still feel that I have this feeling of like frustration when clients go through the whole thing of like, you know, we want to know the quote and we want to get, and I give them all these like quotes for, this is regarding like Luminescent Grand, that piano that I made. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Cause those are like the ones that I charge like a lot of money for. Mm-hmm. They, oftentimes I feel like a client will string me along and then like decide that it was out of their budget. Mm. And I like don't want, like I don't feel like I should lower my rates, but I also mm-hmm. feel I still get like that little bit of like, ugh, why is every, and then it'll be like, you know, like the last client was like, mm-hmm. it's a massive foundation and they went with like a less expensive mm-hmm. performance. And I just felt like frustrated by that, but I'm going to do my very best this year to like let go of that and just like not, I don't feel like I need to change anything.
Right.
I feel I've really dialed in my rates and I feel like I've really dialed in.
Yeah.
Like how I think about it. It's just more so of like just not feeling like frustrated whenever.
Yeah. Yeah. I took a sales class once and somebody said something in that class that was super helpful to me. He said, an objection is not rejection. It's a request for more information. And I have taken that into like my everyday life. So I want to ask you a question and I want you to give me your gut answer. Mm-hmm. In this program that you're pitching, this project, what is the highest value that you provide the audience?
The highest value that I provide. So like when the client's coming to me, like what are they getting the most out of for their audience from what I'm offering?
Yeah. Like your gut reaction, like you're having imagine you're having an amazing performance right now. It's going really, really well. It's exactly what you wanted and you're getting paid really well. Mm-hmm. What is the audience getting?
Oh, they're getting like a very unique, one of a kind experience that I still feel is setting a bar for live music experiences. It's a one of a kind instrument. There's literally none of them like what I've made in the entire world. And I'm constantly looking for it. And then that plus you know, without sounding boastful, like a very high level virtuosic musical performance. And then with all of that wrapped into a very personable, you know, I interact with the audience. I talk to people, I invite them over to play the piano. I explain the piano. I give them a little education. I give them, you know, the history of synesthesia, the process of building the piano, and they get a very unique and high quality artistic experience.
Do they talk about it for a long time afterwards? Do they tell their friends and family about it?
Yeah, it's very, very rare that at the end of even a corporate performance where I'm not allowed to have any kind of like, you know, signage or anything that guides people to my social media, it's very rare that I still don't end up with like, you know, a dozen or so new followers of people who are just like so like interested in what they just saw that they want to see more.
That's your sell. That everything that you just said, and I'll save this and send you a copy of it. But from my perspective, a once in a lifetime experience, you're hired. Because any other pianist, every musician gives you a different performance, but you have something that is literally, truly one of a kind. And do you say that every time you're talking to anybody?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's in my pitch deck. You know, whenever I get an inquiry through my website, I respond with an automatic pitch deck that kind of like just, you know, goes over the experience. There's also videos that I have like, and on my website that's like has people talking like audience what do they call that, audience testimonies.
Oh, yeah. Testimonials.
Yeah, testimonials, yeah. In the videos that I feel good. Like really drive home the points of like people just being like, yo, because it's something very like synesthesia, to experience synesthesia in a mind that doesn't naturally have it, mm-hmm. is definitely like I can tell it's doing something to people's brains, and I think it's good.
Do you have it?
I have a non-typical form of it where it's not about, not necessarily like I see colors when, mm-hmm. or like hear sound. I get very distinct sensations on certain parts of my body, like on my face right here, or on my neck, cool. or in my hands, like between my fingers.
Oh, cool.
Certain timbres like excite that.
And cool.
Very visceral.
Yeah. Yeah. If the client that you are pitching to doesn't end up wanting a once in a lifetime experience, then there's no price that you could have met them at anyway.
That's what I tell myself.
Yeah. That's
exactly what I tell myself. Yeah. That's how I stopped trying to undersell too. I stopped trying to like, I told myself like a year or two ago, I'm not going to respond with, do you want to adjust the quote? I just don't even do that anymore. I'm just like, okay,
good. Yeah. That's great. I love that. Thank you for sharing. All right. Anybody else want to let anything go? Did everybody go? Huh? I don't know. Maybe.
I guess I can go.
All right.
Yeah. I'd say one thing I want to leave in 2021 would be chasing stuff. Mm. I think I was just constantly just like going from band rehearsal place to rehearsal place, just saying, oh, this could be a cool thing to do. Oh, this thing's like a cool thing. I think I had like shiny object syndrome where every new thing I was like, oh, let's do this.
Yeah.
And then finally I got to the point where it's just like, you know what? I've got a big enough space. Like I'm just building my own studio. Spent like the whole last weekend, like building like Safe and Sound sound panels and, getting like a proper drum room set up and getting the entire basement like hooked up into like a nice recording space and
nice,
making it cozy and making it a place people would actually want to go to. So it's not so much a question as whose place it's going to be. Just come to my place. I've got everything set up. You don't have to bring your shit. Just use mine. Like,
yeah.
Like basically getting rid of like any kind of reason for anyone to really want to go at any other place.
Cool. That sounds great. I think that goes along with what a lot of us have said, you know, just boundaries, slowing down.
Yep. And then also invested all the money I made from gigs into like microphones and stuff too. So that way we can record it all too.
Yeah.
Getting it, just trying to take it to that next level.
Yeah. Yeah. Level up. Awesome. Does anyone else want to share? Are we ready to move on? All right, cool. So as we move from 2021 into 2022, you're here today and yesterday because you made the decided effort that you're ready to move your business from one rung to the next rung in one way or another. And now is the time where we get to start designing that. And so you have a little bit of homework. And I want you guys tonight to take a little bit of time and dream about your ideal life. You can pick a time in the future if you like that, or, you know, obviously this, nothing's going to happen overnight, but I want you to come into tomorrow's session knowing what this next year, what these next 3 years, 5 years would look like for you in a perfect world. What kinds of things do you have in your psyche, in your, you know, dream space, on your mood boards that are, you know, moving you forward? Is it like, I really want to take my kids to California. I really want to go to Disneyland in Anaheim. And in order for me to do that, there's some career goals that I have to accomplish along the way. You know, I really want to speak at a music. I really want to speak at South by Southwest. There it is. I said it out loud. So I have these little kind of flagstones further up my path that I'm hoping to get to. And I want you to kind of, I want you to have some time to think about it and come in tomorrow. And let's talk about the next 3 days. We're going to talk about where we want to go, how we can connect with other people from a place of authenticity and move toward our goals in a community setting. And then we're going to, on the last day, we're going to talk about making it all official. And are we ready to launch? What's holding us back? What are our own objections? Where do we still have reservations? And tonight, when you're thinking about, you know, what you want your life to look like, you can be as specific or as general as you want. I think the more specific, then the easier it is to kind of draw that roadmap. But if you know, like there's a producer that you really want to work with, or a studio that you've always wanted to record in, or a band that you want to come to your studio, you see where I'm going with this. Dream big. The world is your oyster. There's no rules anymore. We can basically do whatever we want as long as we're not getting anybody sick, right? All right. Does anybody have any questions for me? I would love to hear from you all.
I guess I have a question that goes back to what you were talking about with pricing and stuff, but we can save that for a little bit later if you prefer.
Oh, I'm fine with it. Go ahead.
When you were saying, like, you were talking about pricing and, you know, the tiers that you were offering, like I found that was a really good for me when it came to like Luminescent Grand, what I was doing. But then I found that when I got into this like content creation space, I found that there was another method that I kind of had adopted that seemed to be a little bit more compliant for, or I guess a little bit more loose for the client to kind of like make their own decision. I just want to know what you think about this. So I would do is I would ask them what they wanted. And then I would say, and then what do you have to pay? Like what can you afford? And I would ask them to fulfill these two questions. And then what they wanted, I would say, this is what I would charge for that. And I'd make sure that I was super stoked with it. Because even if they were like, oh, I would have paid a lot more for that, I'd been like, I don't care. Whatever I'm getting paid for this is great. Yeah. And then the other thing was what they could afford. And then I would respond to that with what I would give them. So like some clients would be like, oh, you know, I would really like a custom-made song, a video, and you know, something else, like some images that I can add. And then I'd say, okay, now what do you can afford? And they'd be like, my budget's like $1,000. And then I would say, okay, so what you're gonna get for that is this and that. And then I would give them those two things. And most times I found they would actually go with what they wanted rather than what they could afford.
They would rise up to meet you.
Yes, especially when I didn't, sometimes I would kind of compromise, like, you know, okay, they had 1,000, I would normally charge 2,500, but maybe I'll charge them like 1,700. And I'd even be like, normally I charge the X amount for this, but because your budget, now I know your budget, I can pull back a little bit, maybe just give you, instead of a minute long video, you'll get 40 seconds, right? Or something like that. And I kind of would customize my quote based off of what they would give me. rather than just giving them a rigid, like, pick these tiers.
Yeah. I love that.
I want to know what you think about that.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. Have you taken a sales class?
No, I actually, just, that's one of the, yeah.
No, you just know how to do it. Yeah. That's good sales right there.
Cool.
Yeah. I think everything that you just said is spot on with giving the client what they want and helping the client achieve their goals. You know, like when you get right down to it, sales is fixing someone's problem for them in exchange for money. Money is just an exchange of energy. And you're saying, I'll give you my energy on your problem for a limited amount of time in exchange for gasoline and groceries, right? So you really nailed it, I think, on that. Yeah, good job.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark.
I'm sure I'm not alone in this space here, but when you framed the homework to think about your ideal life and where you want to be, mm-hmm. I'm thinking the picture I have in my mind is not just me. It's going to affect a lot of people.
Absolutely.
I started out as, you know, a singer-songwriter, former bass player, didn't really have a lot of guitar skills. And then once I got excited about writing, I thought, oh, crap, I have to really boost my guitar skills. So I'm still on that incline, still building that.
But sure.
But the pattern I've noticed, and I've recorded an EP and 2 full-length CDs now, that the relatively small ideas I start out with grow organically in the recording process into a very expensive performance. and, you know, I always feel guilty about not paying the supporting musicians as much as I think they're worth. I lost $1,000 on the last show I put on. But I did it because it was an event. It was the best CD release I could muster in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a passage for me leaving my corporate job behind and doing this now. But sure. I can't afford to do that forever. And I don't know if I could live with the guilt of underpaying. But I've got a minimal 5-piece group. 6 is better as an additional moving part. And I'm thinking now, you know, if I'm shopping around for gigs as a new band, relatively new artist, and I want to pay everybody $300 for a 2-set show, I feel like I'm going to get 99 out of 100 no's.
That's a tough one. They talk about this in Hitsville, the Motown Museum, just how expensive it all was when when you had a full orchestra in the Motown studio. I mean, you just hit the nail on the head of like the problem with the emerging music market. So you have some options. So options are to start solo and start at $700, like Abigail was saying, where you are, maybe you would have done it for $300, but if you tell whoever that you're $700, and here's the value, and here's why, and here's how many people are going to come, then when you're doing it as a full band for only $1,500, they're actually getting 4 more people for only twice as much instead of 4 times as much. You see how I did that? Mm-hmm. And so it's a matter of pricing yourself highest first, and then having them seem like the value add-on isn't as high as the dollar amount is. But it's a constant struggle. And it's one of the things that I really want to talk about on a regular basis with everybody continuously. How much are you getting for gigs? You know, you said that you mentioned that you lost $1,000. So did you get paid $600 or $500?
Yeah.
For a full band? Yeah, probably.
About $600.
How many tickets were sold?
About 45. And it's a Trinity House Theater. You know? So they seat 70 comfortably. Had a lot of, the false alarm Facebook commits. Like, yep, going to be there.
Yeah, that happens. how much were the tickets?
$20.
Yeah, so.
And then we get a percentage of the door.
Sure. Yeah. So 45 tickets at $20, that's a $900 gross. So it's sort of always a two-pronged attack of getting more people to come to the show and getting higher ticket prices. And when you are able to locate those 1,000 people who hit right at a price point that they're always comfortable with, then that's when you start to get into that, you know, you're making $100,000 a year. We can talk about that. That's the 1,000 true fans theory. We can talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. But yeah, that, you know, I don't have an answer for you, unfortunately, because this is a conversation that we're going to have to keep having for a while.
Yeah, I know you've got other clients, and it's what I call the singer-songwriter dilemma, where you know, you create your own little bubble, but then what comes out of that bubble is something much bigger, and it's hard to reproduce. But that's my joy zone. That's where it feels the best.
So you're doing original music, then not covers at all.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's come back to it.
It's worth its own like focus group, maybe on an ongoing basis. You know, and
yeah,
I'm sure there's a sideman perspective, and there's a band leader perspective that they need to find a way to work together.
Can I step in on that a little bit?
Yeah.
Because I have some experience in that area. So like I said yesterday, I'm mostly a solo performer, but then I have a backing band when the budget is appropriate to have one included. So I've actually, the musicians that I work with, I've had conversations with them, and I said, listen, you know, here's what I would love to pay you every single time. And, you know, what is your minimum so that I know if it's something that I can work you into, and at worst hit your minimum, and at best hit what I'd like to hit for you. And they've all been very honest. And you know, I try to respect, you know, how far they have to drive, how much time it's going to cost them and stuff, if I can't get the ultimate price that I'd like to pay them. But being honest about it, and Steph had mentioned something where, like, you know, if I'm pricing myself at $600, let's say, for a solo show, I'll double it and say, well, if you'd like the backing band, it's going to be $1,200. Here's how many sets, here's how long it'll take. It you know, includes the PA, the lights, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll build out my band with the rest of the budget within that scope. Some people just want to play because they love to play, and, you know, will give me a minimum of 100. So I always try to pay more than 100. And some people, you know, will only work for a certain amount, so they only get to work with me when I have enough to meet that. So as long as you're honest with them, and you don't have to be honest like, oh, here's what I'm making, but be honest with them about their expectations, they tend to be honest back with you, if that makes sense. So there's no hard feelings on either side.
Yeah, that's very similar to the approach I've tried thus far. So I appreciate that.
Maybe Mark, helps. We can teach you how to be a looping artist like Isaac, and you can have everybody record their parts into a trackpad, and, you know, a little boop, 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 boop. And then you can be a one man show. So you got everybody, you got a whole string orchestra, you got a whole horn section, and it's just you up there.
I just need one button that tells jokes while I tune my guitar.
Yeah. That's great.
That's kind of what I do with my gigs is with Luminescent Grand is I just have backing tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just perform over backing tracks.
It's become pretty standard, I think, at least in the entire hip hop community. You know, I put on a summer concert series, and when we got there, when I got there, every time the artists were like, okay, where do I plug in my phone? And I was like, plug in your phone. What are you going to do with your phone? And they're like, that's where the track is. And it was like, I come from like the jam band live music scene. And so that kind of just.
So did I. It took me a little while to feel comfortable, feel not like a poser.
Like, where do I put this? What is this?
Yeah. No, it's brilliant though. You have your whole show in your pocket, and it's so affordable because it's just you, and you know exactly what you're going to get every time. You know, and you never have anybody not able to make it. I got a flat tire, you know, so I support efficiency in the form of technology as frequently as possible, as long as it adds to the musical experience instead of detracting from it. It really has to add to the music in general for me. But I think you're all wonderful. I have to go pick up my children. So thank you all so much for joining me. Tomorrow, we're going to start designing what's going to happen next. And it is in your control. It is in your hands, what kind of life you're going to manifest for yourself as we crawl out of this. And I'm going to do it too. And you're all helping me because this is a dream come true for me. So thank you. Let me know if you have any more questions. Thank you all so much for coming.
Cool. Thank you for hosting it.
You're welcome. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Bye-bye.
When Songs Mean Business is a production of Steph Belcher Business Management, LLC. This episode was hosted, edited, and produced by me, Steph Belcher. Please make sure to join us in our Facebook group, When Songs Mean Business, and follow us on Instagram at When Songs Mean Business. As always, thank you to The Dropout for the break music. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful day. Thank you.